Are we doing, when we're doing this one as an Indicia, yeah? Can I swear on this?
We should mention Indicia at the top. Yes, first,
if you slip, I can cut it out.
Probably,
okay.
And we've got a sponsor too right now, so we're really.
You consider it a swear word?
Yes. I'll have to cut that out. Thanks for making that extra work for me. That would be bad.
Okay. I won't say anymore.
Stop. Please stop. Oh. You're just making extra work for me.
That was the last time I was going to say. You won't hear again. Podcast.
Michael, it's going to be nothing but beeps.
Lord.
Oh, crap. I'm sorry.
It's like a George Carlin routine on ABC. I'll tell you what. Beep, 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 beep.
All right. Let's sweep Mike till the top of the hour. So let's get this thing done. We'll do some interview stuff and hopefully mix Quinn and we'll be all set.
What the? Did anyone hear that? That was.
Whoa, Brad.
Brad, that was like Brad, a robot.
No, I said we've got Mike until the top of the hour. Let's kick this off.
Top of the hour. Hey, it's Kevin and the Weasel coming at you on 102.7.
We're in three different time zones. Of course I've got to use phrases like top of the hour.
I just drank a gallon of my own urine.
You know what, though, Scott, in all seriousness, you might want to hang up on Brad and redial in.
I'm going to reconnect, Brad. Hold on, Brad. I'm going to bring you back in, okay?
Maybe don't call him back. All right.
Maybe don't call him back. Yeah, the show might be stronger. I don't know.
You guys are killing me. You guys are just killing me with this. I've never been so nervous in my life. Circles of friendships are converging at breakneck speed
well,
toward each other.
So this is funny to me. What makes you nervous?
I'm not ashamed of you. It's just that I want to make sure you're having a good time. I want to make sure they're having a good time. I don't want Dave to be upset about curse words. I don't want you to be bored by no curse words. I don't want Brad to think we're laughing at his laugh, but I want to laugh at his laugh.
Well, you need to take what I take, man. Lexapro.
So, you poor guy, so you're nervous about being nervous now. That's the word.
Yeah, I am. I do need some Lexapro. Do you have one?
Not on me. I take it every morning. Changed my life.
You probably shouldn't share that prescription medicine, huh?
You're probably not supposed to. And honestly, you'd have to take it for about a month before it kicks in.
Oh, does it? It takes a while
it's
to kick
like
in?
It's not like Ativan where you can just take one of them and go, woo!
Well, I know some people that do that. I know some people that just pop anxiety medicine like it's candy, and I just assumed that that's what you had.
No, I have a different...
They're stuck in traffic right now. Anyway. Webcomics Weekly.
Webcomics Weekly.
So, I am in the beautiful Northwest mountains, ocean air.
Trees.
There's Pugets, there's sounds, there's bridges. Uh-huh. Yeah, there are trees.
A common Texas occurrence, I'm sure, the big green tree, right?
Yeah, really. About as common in Texas as the Obama supporter.
Hey, old topical!
But I've been spending the week up here at the Penny Arcade offices watching this this place is anything but webcomics. I think web is incidental. It's a medium by which they convey their godhood upon man, a conduit. Yes,
it's like the bush for God.
Yes,
you speak through the internet.
Yeah, and. And then the IPs around it are holy ground, so you have to take your sandals off when you approach. But in the middle of this incredible mecca of technology, Mike and I have been doing some very traditional art.
We've really connected.
Yeah, we've been painting. So you guys been reading about that?
Yes. Well, before we get too far, we should probably do the introductions, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then we all go quiet.
God, I have never been more nervous in my life. You start.
Hi,
you are nervous, aren't you, Scott? You gotta shake.
This is my friend Scott Kurtz of PvP.
You know what's wonderful, Scott? It's almost sweet. I've never seen you nervous.
Are you serious?
I've never seen you nervous.
You never. Well, you're still not seeing it.
I'm watching it. It's a treat.
Only Mike is getting to see a sweat right there.
I'm gonna throw up.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, you know what you should do? You should probably shake his hand at this point, because I bet it's the clammiest thing in the world right now.
Oh, I can look over there. He's glistening.
All right, so Mike draws Penny Arcade. You might have heard of it. I'm Scott Kurtz. I'm dying over here. I draw PvP, but if I survive this, I'll keep drawing it. Shut up, David.
I'm Dave Kellett. I'm enjoying Scott being nervous. Draw Sheldon, Brad.
And I'm Brad Geiger. I do Evil Incorporated, Fables, and Courting Disaster.
Way to work that all in.
And Mike, the correct way to pronounce your last name is Krahulik. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, actually, yeah.
And I hear a lot of people put a G at the beginning of that. Like, they pronounce it like it's Grahulik. But it's
heard that one.
The correct pronunciation is Krahulik.
Yeah, it's Krahulik. It's Yugoslavian.
Is it really?
Really?
It is, yeah.
Huh.
My grandparents are Slavic.
The Slavs.
I just counted.
Oh, did you? I thought you were opening some maw.
No. I just can't.
Some portal to your world.
Somebody, yeah. There's somebody in Eastern Europe right now going, oh, listening into the podcast.
Finally. It's my episode of Webcomics Weekly. Keep counting.
Well, we've got Mike for the first half of the podcast, and we thought this would be a good time to talk about Penny Arcade as specifically and some of the things that they teach us about webcomics and some of the things that they do that, quite frankly, that go completely against what you find in the How to Make Webcomics book. And we thought that'd be kind of fun to talk about. But before we get too far, we do need to mention that this is another one of the Webcomics Weekly podcasts that is brought to you by our good friends at Indicia.com.
And Indicia.
Indicia, and Dave, we've got a special promotion that Indicia is doing, right?
Yeah, it's actually, and this is serious, far, far better than anything that we got when we signed up, so it's actually a pretty good deal. It's at Indicia.com/webcomics, and it's an entire, what would you call it? I guess a kit, a starter kit for Indicia. So it's Indicia.com/webcomics, and we'll be talking about that later on in the show, but for now, let's chat with Mike.
Now we really sound like a morning zoo. 15 past the hour, Dizia.com, Chubby the Bear, talking about comics.
It's Turtle in the Wash. All righty, going back to sweating.
Turtle in the Wash. We're gonna put a listener in the cash box, but first, Dizia.com. If you gotta mail something, Dizia.com, webcomics.
Today's guest contest, how much gallons of sweat is Scott putting out today with his level of nervousness?
Count the number of times Tim Buckley mentions video games in his post. Win a shot at the cash box.
We're going to take the 99th caller.
We're going to bury a listener alive today. This afternoon, down in the Circuit City, we're going to bury someone in the ground.
No, you're not going to bury them. You're not going to really bury them, are you?
No, we're going to bury them. They're going to die.
It's called the... We're promoting the new zombie movie, Dig Out of a Grave. Win two tickets to Mall of the Dead.
Originally, it was going to be bury them in savings, but we decided to actually go ahead and
bury them in savings. That promotion went badly. Anyway.
I don't mean to try and get this back on track, but I'm really curious what we do that you guys tell people not to do. That piqued my interest.
I got to tell you, because I've seen it firsthand. Watching you guys create the strip, you are shocked to look over and see me just typing dialogue into panels.
Yeah.
Like, to you, that seems backwards. Right?
Well, because the basic process, I mean, of like, I think all three, and if Chris was here, four of us, would be sort of baffled at how you guys do such awesome work together. Because anytime we have ever tried to work like mano a mano with another partner, with a couple of other people, it's always failed horribly. What do you think makes it work for you?
I don't know, you know, what your guys' process is like, but, you know, for us, I think it actually makes for a better product because you sort of have someone to veto the stupid ideas, you know? Like, there are a lot of times where I sit here and I chuckle to myself and I tell Jerry an idea I had and he just says no. And then, you know, inevitably what comes up later is going to be better. Like, there's sort of a... You know, it's like both of us have to put our stamp of approval on the joke before it goes online. I think that helps.
Yeah. But it's not that smooth, though. I mean, it can't be unless you guys have a really unique relationship. When he says no, sometimes you have to be very upset.
Not really. I mean, you know, we've been working together for like 13 years now, and
if, you know, if he says it's not funny, or if I say something, you know, he thinks it's not funny, it's not worth arguing about. We don't have time for it. We have to make a strip, you know. We don't work ahead at all. So, mm-hmm. you know, if it's 10:30 and we're starting to write the comic and it's got to be, you know, I have to start drawing it by noon, we don't have time to bitch and complain that you don't think my joke is funny. Like, we have to agree on something.
I got to tell you, that's something that really blew my mind, that you guys, it never dawned on me that you have never once tried to build a buffer. In fact, it's contrary to what you do. Is building a buffer would destroy what you do.
Yeah, I don't, the comic really, to us, it's important that it, when possible, be topical. So, you know, every comic starts with us looking at the news for that day and then trying to figure out what's funny, what makes us laugh. If we're going to go on vacation or something like that, you know, we might do a week's worth of strips, but that's about it.
Now, hey, could you imagine anyone else that you could work with that you would have that kind of relationship with? In other words, you pitch an idea, they say no flat out, and that's cool with you. You roll on to the next one. Could you imagine anyone else that
no.
you could work with like that? And
no,
why do you think you've got this with Jerry?
I think a lot of it is, you know, as sappy as it sounds, it's sort of like a mutual respect thing. Like, if he doesn't think it's funny, then it's probably not funny or funny enough, you know, or maybe it needs to be tuned or be funnier. But, you know, then on the other hand, the other side of that is when I say something and he does laugh, I know I have, you know, I know I said something good.
Right.
I have a winner.
Right. So here's a question I got for you, Mike. How much say do you have over his writing and how much say does he have over your drawing? Like editorial wise, do you know what I mean? Like, if you draw something, he's like, no, that's got to go on the other side of the frame. And you're like, no, man,
no.
Seriously, it's got to be, this is the way it's got to be.
He doesn't have any say over the art, really. I mean, he likes to, sometimes he'll slip something in or he'll request something, but, you know, he doesn't have like a final approval or say, oh, no, that should be in this frame. Like, that's not the sort of process.
You guys have seen the ones that he's drawn, right?
Yeah.
So,
hey, by the way, that's Christopher Straub just joining us from Starslip Crisis.
Hey, sorry I'm late.
That's quite all right. We're glad you're here.
Hey, Chris.
I want to find out what headset you've got. You sound fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, you sound like you are in the room with me. I'm reaching for you right now.
And I'm feeling your touch.
With his clammy hands.
With his bloody, sweaty hands.
They're really enjoying how nervous I am right now. Chris,
are you like on the top of a bunch of stack of chairs or what?
No, he's apparently brought together his church friends with his biker friends, to quote Scott.
By the way, which ones are we? Are we the church friends or are we the biker friends?
No, I can assure you that we are the church friends in this situation.
Wow.
There's a lot of glowering going on right now on both sides of the aisle.
Scott is very much condescending on us as the church friends. Right?
No, my God, here we go.
We're the church friends? Really?
In that constructed analogy, yes, you were the church friends. I'm sorry.
Look, I can see why Brad is the church friends.
Wait a minute. We were talking about collaborations as it pertains to Mike and Jerry, and they've got a really unique relationship. There's no other way about it. And Mike, what you were talking about, what I want to come back to, is the idea of mutual respect. I mean, you guys really do mutually respect each other, and that's not just a fake kind of saying it. You obviously really do. There's some people in the audience maybe that don't know that how you and Jerry got together. Could you give us the rundown on that real quick?
Just, you know, the quick story is that we met in a journalism class in high school. He was writing for the paper, and I was drawing cartoons, and I was an artist in desperate need of a writer. And he was looking to, you know, write some comics, I guess. And it was it was kismet. I think the main thing is that, like you said, it's that mutual respect. Like, I know I think he's a really talented writer. And so, you know, if he has an idea that, or if I have an idea that he says, you know, doesn't laugh at, then I just keep going until something, you know, something makes us both laugh.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had an argument, like a real knockdown, drag-out fight?
Over a comic?
Over the comic?
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had a real argument over making a comic, no. The comic is more important than the two of us. Like, egos, you really can't there's no place for that. Like when you're trying to make the comic, the only thing that matters is trying to make the best comic you can. So it's not worth getting all pissy over some stupid idea. Like if it doesn't make you both laugh, then you just need to move on and write something else.
Mm.
Yeah. I watched them today. They had started with an idea. They got stuck on it. And since I'm in town and everybody kind of wanted to have lunch today, everyone was kind of gathered outside of their little mini office inside the bigger office waiting for them to come up with something. And then they were kind enough to take a reprieve and go to lunch. And when I wandered back in here after, they had completely abandoned their original idea. They had just cut it loose, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we do is there has to be some funny idea that we start with. And then a lot of times we'll just sort of run into the problem where we get two funny panels and then we can't get a punchline, you know? And if we can't punch it, it doesn't really matter how funny those first two panels are. We just say, all right, this isn't going anywhere. Let's drop it and move on. Like, there's no time to waste, you know?
Right? Wow.
And so that's – oh, sorry. I was going to say that's where it's very different from what we advise because, like, in the book we advise have a nice buffer before you even put your strip up. And
that's good advice. Yeah.
And, like, avoid collaborations when you're starting because it's tough to kind of form a relationship and get something going. And
I wouldn't say to avoid collaborations. I think that, you know, for the most part, most – like 90% of artists need a writer. It's a very different skill set. I think that, and I think that a lot of writers need artists. Like when you look at something like XKCD or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. I think that it's two very different disciplines, and I think a lot of artists think they can write, and they really can't. It's really hard to do. I would recommend collaborations, definitely.
Yeah, Dave. Oh, wait, did I say? I'm sorry. I didn't. Yeah. Yes.
You know, and a lot of writers think that they don't need an artist. They think, well, I'll just, you know, draw stick figures and put my words in there. I think that comics is a merger between, you know, art and writing. I think that both are really important. And I think it's a good idea to get two people who can do, you know, both really well.
So, Mike, what's advice, because we all get this question a lot, what's advice that you would give to a young kid or kids who want to collaborate together? And you haven't seen any of their work necessarily. That doesn't necessarily matter. But, like, what would advice, because we wouldn't necessarily know what to tell them. What would you tell them as far as how to make a collaboration work?
I think you need to have a common interest. You know, you need to find something that the two of you, you know, can agree is going to be the focus for your comic strip. And it needs to be something that both of you have a passion for, you know, whether it's, you know, dog grooming or whatever it is. Like, you both need to love the same thing. Yeah. And the comic needs to spring out of that.
Yeah, the thing that you said that really sticks with me is that, you know, you said the comic is more important than either one of you two alone.
Definitely,
you know,
yeah.
That's at the end of the day, that's what's important. It's not about you and it's not about Jerry. It's about Penny Arcade and how good it is today.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially now when you see everything that's been built around it, you know. I mean, these guys have employees and they're supporting, you know, a lot with it. So,
well, yeah, that's the whole reason you're down in Seattle, Scott, is for PAX, right?
That's right. I was actually up here for PAX last weekend. And, you know, and that has become something much larger than just them. I think this year especially, you could tell that I think at one point someone was helping. Was it one of your volunteers was helping you do something? And they turned to you and they said, do you attend every PAX?
Yeah, one of our enforcers was asking me how many packs I've been to.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And were you like first one? Pretty good so far.
No, I told him I'd attended every single one.
But I mean, it's...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's really interesting to see what it's become. And I've known Mike and Jerry on and off since... to varying degrees, since they right after they got their start, we were both at MPOG together. We both kind of survived that imploding, and you know, I've seen them in various stages, and it's really amazing what it's become. But it was very funny to watch the first time I was up here, and I was typing dialogue, working the dialogue out in the actual panels of my strip, and I turned around, and both of them were staring at me like, "What is he doing?" It's like typing dialogue straight in. Is that it? Are you writing it? That's all there. That's all you do.
Well, to us, I mean, you're the only other cartoonist that we hang out with, you know. So, like, for us, making a cartoon involves two people sitting down and talking it out until it's perfect and then writing it down. Like, the idea that I could just sit down in front of a computer and type out a comic, like, I don't know how to do that. And in fact, I had to do it once when they had their baby. It was sort of came early and we weren't ready for it. And, God, I mean, I had an idea for a joke. I had a pretty funny gag, but I spent probably 4 hours fiddling with the text and just couldn't get it right. And
so
it's really frustrating.
It's very interesting to me because, like, I mean, certainly I work on other things than PvP, and I've wanted to draw other comics and stuff, side projects and this. And, for example, we came home and to your house and we've been painting. You've been very charged up and excited about painting. But yeah. Never in a million years did you consider, I guess I'll try it, even just for fun, not to make a business out of it. But the idea of making a comic strip on your own, just as that's not how it works in your head.
No, not when I'm not that good a writer. Like I think I'm a decent artist and I'm getting better, but
what was that look? Yeah.
Well, he's a better writer at the very least.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't consider doing that.
Would you two be offended or creeped out if I said that in a way, in a very non-gay way, it was almost like a marriage?
No, it's totally like
a
marriage.
It's, I mean, it really is like a marriage. Like, I remember saying to you the other day, I was talking about Jerry, and you said that you guys had become something more than friends. You know, and I say that all the time about my wife. I say, you know, well, we're more than just married. We're something past that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys have really become more than just friends. But Penny Arcade wasn't something that you guys sat down and said, hey, let's make this Penny Arcade thing and try to bring out a whole cloth. It kind of organically grew out of what you two were working on. It just happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it just happened.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast are looking for someone to sit down and build it specifically.
Yeah, well, you know, when you say, you know, talking to kids who want to start a webcomic, like, we had no intention of starting a webcomic. Like, that's hard advice for me to give because we didn't go through that phase.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, no,
so, you know what? I'll jump back for a second because this has sort of intrigued me, and forgive me if it's a dark question, but have you guys ever talked about, because, I mean, I know you have, I'm guessing, somewhere between a half dozen and a dozen employees now, but, like, what, do you guys have contingency plans if one of you gets hurt? Like, because I'm always terrified if I crush a drawing hand or something.
Well,
no, I've got backup plans in case.
I've told Jerry that if I die, he needs to quit Penny Arcade.
Really? You've had this, don't marry again.
Yeah, no, I've had that talk with him. I said, something happens to me, I want you to quit.
And
I don't want you to go on. I don't want you to be happy.
You don't want to find another artist?
No, I don't want him to find another artist.
Are you joking or are you serious?
I'm 100% serious.
What does Jerry say about that?
What do you say? Are you going to, if I die, would you get another artist?
Yeah, he's pointing at me.
Yeah, he would change me out like a fucking light bulb. I mean, effing light bulb.
I'll edit that out.
Sorry.
But that's the bad thing is that you're very replaceable. As an artist? Seriously, my friend Robert Kirkman replaced the guy that invented Invincible with him, and nobody remembers that Corey Walker started Invincible. Now it's Ryan Ottley. But if you could not replace Kirkman on Invincible, it wouldn't work.
Well, that's
true. I like to believe that the personas, like the Gabe and Tycho characters, are less interchangeable.
What are they going to do? They're going to replace the Gabe character?
Yeah, I mean, he could get Buckley, I guess, or something. Buckley likes video games.
Really change it up.
And he's already
changed the dynamic
with our work, so.
You do see an awful lot of people who really seem to spend a lot of time trying to perfect that Penny Arcade look. Is that my look?
You know, I mean, there's people that I admire, and I'm stealing from them. I mean, what Picasso said, you know, good artists copy, great artists steal. It's I take stuff from Scott. I take stuff from Steven Silver. I take stuff from any place I can find it. Trying to sort of mash it all together into my own thing.
I also want to point out something. I'm just trying to get everything that I've thought of over the week. We were driving this morning into work, and I was talking about previous conventions and stuff, and I mentioned I mentioned Howard Taylor. I said, oh yeah, I went this one time with Howard Taylor, and you said, that's Schlock Mercenary, right? And I said, right. And you go, see, I'm learning. Like, you really are not involved in webcomics at all. Do you really read webcomics that much?
I don't.
You don't, really?
I don't read any except PvP.
And that's only because you know me. Otherwise,
yeah,
you wouldn't read it.
Friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mike, do you read any graphic arts at all, like graphic novels or like any traditional DC Marvel kind of stuff or Dark Horse? Or?
Not really. I mean, Jerry recommended Why the Last Man to me, and my wife and I read that and really enjoyed it. But
that's a great one, yeah.
That's about it.
So because I know I'm always looking for like artistic keys and cues from other artists. Like, where do you go out to look? Do you just sort of flip through books and that's all you need?
A lot of my stuff that I like comes from animation. I hang out on like the drawing board and in DeviantArt and all those same places, and
right.
That's where I draw my inspiration from.
Cool. Hey, so what's the average week like for you? Do you do full 5 days a week or 6 days a week, or what do you do?
Yeah, we're in the office Monday through Friday. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, so on Tuesdays we draw Wednesday strip. On Thursday we draw Friday strip. And on Friday we draw Monday strip. So I have off days on Monday and Wednesday. And on those days I work on whatever side project we're doing. Like this last Wednesday I knocked out 2 pages for our Prince of Persia comic. So we're always working on something, or the game, or whatever it is we're doing.
Right.
One of the other things. Go ahead, Dave. I know you're going someplace.
No. I wasn't going anywhere. You go ahead.
No, wait. Robert Koo. He's
not. All right, Porky.
Robert Koo.
Well, I wasn't quite ready to go into my question. I was afraid I was stepping on Dave's toes, but talk about the role that he's played. I mean, you guys are really unique in that you've got a person like that on your team.
Yeah, I mean, basically he came in and was able to take all of the business problems off of our shoulders so that we could just focus on making comic strips. You know, I mean, he came in and the first thing he did is he built us an advertising model, then he built us a merchandising model, and then he just sort of takes all the ideas that we have and actually does them. You know, we go into his office, 4 years ago or whatever, and we're like, hey, we should have our own convention. It should have this, this, and this. And then boom, he's able to make packs,
If I'm a collaborator and I want to find my own Robert Koo, I mean, among web cartoonists, that's a phrase that gets used a lot. How do I find my Robert Koo? How do you find him? And if he finds you, how do you make sure that he's not the not Robert Koo?
Well, I mean, what I'll say is that I definitely recommend you find someone who has business experience. It really is a different skill set. Knowing how to manage a business and being a good business person uses a completely different part of your brain than being creative. And not only that, but people in business, they're like Furbies. You remember the Furby toys where you put them together and they talk to each other? Like,
yeah.
They only talk to other business people. They can tell. And so as soon as you have one of your own, like as a pet, all of a sudden he's able to communicate with all these other business people and they network and, it works for you. But as far as finding them, we really lucked out. Robert found us. He was just a fan of the comic and he wanted to advertise a game that he was consulting for on Penny Arcade. And, he met us and talked to us for, I think, about a half an hour and realized that we really didn't have any idea or concept of what we had or how to actually manage it, and quit his job and came to work for us.
Wait a minute. He's taking a meeting with these two guys. He realizes that they don't know anything about what they're doing. So he says, I'm going to quit my job and go work with these guys.
Yeah. Well, he wrote us a business plan, like a 5-year business plan. And he brings it to the next meeting that we have. And we look at this thing and we're like, Robert, there's no way we can execute on this plan. Like, I don't know how to do any of this stuff, you know? And so he said, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to come work for you guys for free for, how long was it? 3 months or something? 3 months. And if, you know, by the end of 3 months, if I'm not making my own salary plus earning more money for you guys than you were making before, then I'll, you know, I'll leave, and I'll go back to my other job. But, you know, obviously,
I never knew that story.
That was a long time ago. He's still here. So, and now we have, you know, 10 employees.
Holy cats.
Yep. It's a very serendipitous thing. It's very exciting. I got to admit that, and I have no problem admitting this because I'm this kind of a guy, but it was really difficult not to just cry, like not mist up and cry watching you guys up on that stage at PAX. Like, oh my God, who would have believed? I mean, I know you wouldn't have believed.
No.
But I still remember 1998 kicking papers and books and stuff, making a space so I could lay down on the carpet of my office in my little duplex. And I was on the phone with both of you guys, and we were talking about how great it would be if maybe one day we could make a living at this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you're on stage, and there's, you know, just hundreds and hundreds of people crammed in this room just to hear you guys talk and ask you questions. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really blew up.
So, Mike, is there anything on that original business plan that hasn't yet been executed? Like, are we still awaiting the amusement park or something?
Step 12, Penny Arcade Land.
No, I don't think so. I mean, the way Robert really worked it is he would come in and he would sort of build up one part of the business where, like I said, the first thing he did is he came in and he created an advertising model, and he started getting companies to, you know, advertise on the site. And then once that was sort of running, once it was working well, then we hired someone else to come in and run it. And then Robert moved over and he started working on the merchandising side, like, let's get a store going. Let's get shirts and merchandise and books. And then once that was running, we hired someone to run that. And Robert moves on to the next thing. Let's get PAX going, you know. So he just sort of he builds up a part of the company and then moves on to the next part.
Pretty brilliant.
He's really good at what he does, and it's taken such a load off our shoulders. Like, we really, I mean, outside of, you know, every once in a while they come in, they're like, hey, can we advertise this game, or what do we want to do with this? Like, we have a very high concept role in a lot of that stuff, but the day-to-day, like, business stuff, we just don't have to worry about anymore, which is so nice.
And I know the I got to figure the temptation would be there, but I can't. I'll just ask the question straight. Would he ever come into you and say, hey, you know what? It would be good for business if we did a comic about XYZ.
No, he would never in a million years do that.
No.
That's. I mean, I got to figure, but at the same time,
but
I got
to figure. As a business guy, he must have tried that at one point, though, as a business guy.
No, I mean, the reason that our relationship with Robert works so well is he really sort of understands how important the comic is, and he would never do anything to jeopardize that, because if the comic becomes compromised, then none of the other parts of the business that he's worked so hard to build up matter. You know, if the comic is compromised, the store doesn't matter. No one's, you know, the PAX doesn't matter. The advertising goes away. The comic has to be protected at all costs.
He understands that better than me, because when we did that panel on the business of webcomics and we were coming up with something, I said, maybe we should change this mock comic to do this. It'll be easier to sell. And he goes, don't worry about whether it'll sell. That's my job, is to take your creative and make it sell. Don't change the creative. And I was like, wow, even I was willing to change it.
He really is probably one of the most unique business-minded people I've ever heard of. I mean, just to hear that sentence come out of somebody's mouth is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's sort of the standard problem with newspapers and magazines, isn't it? Is that the advertising and editorial guys are always arguing with each other.
Right. I mean, it's always make my job easier.
Right.
Yeah. In fact,
instead of I've got what it takes to do this job, it's make my job easier.
We're making his job harder most of the time. I mean, we'll do a comic that skewers some game company, and he gets mails the next day because, well, shit, they're one of our advertisers. So,
right.
You know,
right.
He's got a hard job. Definitely, I do not. He also has to, you know, wrangle two artists into creating work at a much higher rate than they're used to. Like, you know, most of the time, you know, before we had Robert, we did the three comics a week, and that was fine. And now we've got, you know, projects for Ubisoft and the game, and it's a lot more work than we're used to. And he's got to stay on top of us and make sure that it's getting done. And I've heard him, that's the worst part of his job. I've heard him tell me that.
We got to go. I think we got to go, guys. I think the fan's calling.
Travis. Well, it's not Kara.
Well, Mike, thanks a lot for hanging out with us. Yeah. We had a really great time talking to you.
It was good to be on the show. Thank you guys very much.
Oh, I survived this. I can't believe it worked.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
Take it easy, Mike.
Bye.
Bye. What were you expecting was going to happen?
Nothing. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, Brad understands it. I think Brad understands it.
Yeah.
But you're different with different friends. It's like, I don't
know.
No, I just...
Scott, I understand. I just think, I actually, and I don't be offended when I say this word, I think it's cute that you got nervous. I
know.
It's endearing to me that you got nervous. I mean, I say that in a loving way.
I totally understand that you're different people with different friends. I think I tend to take on the traits of whoever I'm talking to at the time, but I can't see how this would have gone sour, you know? Yeah.
Well, no,
you think
but
you're,
I,
all right, comics,
no,
that's good.
No, I don't think
I
it was going to go sour, but leave me alone.
All right. One thing that it would be remiss if we didn't touch on, and I'm going to just bring this up because we talked about it before we started recording, is that another one of the things that we all tell people in the book that Penny Arcade goes completely against is we tell people you need to update as often as possible and obviously keep it consistent. Penny Arcade updates 3 days a week, and they're the most successful webcomic on the net. And what Mike said was that I think, did he say that Jerry had a phrase for it? He said you could have hamburgers 6 days a week, or you could have steak 3 days a week. And yes,
yeah.
I'm paraphrasing because he didn't say hamburgers. But that's basically what he said. The whole idea was they're giving their
We're
readers-
the church group? I'm offended. Harumph, harumph.
He didn't say hamburgers.
Yeah, you know
sexual.
What? I guess I am the church group, right?
You were the church group.
Oh, Jimmy Crack Corn. I can't believe I did that. But,
oh, gosh.
But yeah, that's the phrase you use. You know, they're giving their readers steak three times a week.
I thought we've stated in the podcast and in the book that even if you do, what's more important is that you stick to whatever schedule you set, not necessarily that you have.
I think it's...
Well, yeah,
I think
I'll be honest. One of my favorite comics going right now only updates once a week, and that's that Kookaburri strip. And I think even Abominable Charles Christopher only updates once a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And both of those are gorgeous. Like, granted, I may not check in on them for, you know, a couple months at a time, but then I'll read the 12 that have been created since, and I love it. And so,
a strip like that, it takes, I need to be reminded to look at it. Like, a month and a half will go by, and I go, oh, that's right, I like that one.
But what ends up happening is I'll see a link about it somewhere on somebody's blog or something. I'll be like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that in a couple
months. Yeah, but that's my point exactly. If that's where you fall into as a reader, that's not what you want, is somebody who needs to be reminded every month that they need to read the strip. That's the whole idea of updating as often as you can, whether that's every day or 4 days a week or what have you. And that is that the more often you update, the less you have to worry about a reader who needs to be reminded.
That's true, yeah.
I think 3 days a week is on the, you know, it's not outside of the realm of a good, solid, memorable update schedule.
Listen,
I think
guys,
you start
to
go into 2 days a week, it's no good.
I used to think that the 7-day-a-week schedule won me a lot of favors, but things are so much better now that I'm 5 days a week. Now that I'm Monday through Friday, things are so much better.
Believe me, if I wasn't selling to newspapers, I wouldn't be doing 6 days a week.
Why do you guys keep saying this? Now I'm going to go 5 days a week.
Why is that wrong, David? Why are you afraid of that?
Yeah, why?
You know what, Dave? Don't answer that. I know why you're afraid of it. I was afraid of it, too.
No,
Dave,
I've got
a question to ask you.
I'll be specific. I'll answer that, why I do 7 days a week. Because for my business model to work, for me to make as much, if not more, than I made any previous year, I need to put out 2 books a year. And for me to do that, I need the content. And that only happens with 7 days a week.
Oh.
How much are you losing if you don't do that seventh day?
A seventh? How many, well, if I don't do a second book, it's probably 30,000, 35,000 a year if I don't.
No. In terms of pages, how many pages is your book going to be light if you don't do a Sunday strip?
Oh, well, a Sunday takes up a full page, so 52, so 26 pages it'll be light.
Out of how many pages?
If there's 52 weeks in a year and I do two books a year, so that means the Sundays would take up 52 pages. So for every book, I would be short 26 pages.
Yeah. Well, I guess that answers my follow-up question. I always wondered why you do a full newspaper Sunday style.
But Dave, just do that. I mean, then once every time the book comes out, just sit down and knock out a 26 or a 20-page story.
That's fair enough. But then that 26-page story is not sitting in my archives, and it's not generating.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to help you out.
No, I know. Listen, I would love, even when I said I should go to 5 days a week, you should see my wife across the room go, yes, you should go to 5 days a week.
Listen, I'm in the same boat. I have a monthly comic book that fills up with my strips, and I'm not producing. There's 40 strips per comic, but I don't make 40 strips a month. I'm already catching up with myself, and I just went to 5 days a week. But what I'm doing, Dave, is I'm just going, meh, and not worrying about it. I'll burn that bridge when it comes to. Yeah, Chris goes, yeah, I know what that's like.
Yeah.
Dave, I've got a copy of A Blizzard of Lizards here. Yeah. And you said that you would be down 20 pages, right? If you didn't do the Sunday strip. And by the way, I'm not trying to talk you out of this, but just do this. Take one of your books, flip through to page 100, hold the front cover to page 100 in your hand, and take a look at it. It's not that much lighter than a full 125-page book.
Dave, I can cut this out of the podcast later, but you could offer your fans a lot less and charge them the same amount.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what we're saying, isn't it?
Dave, it devalues your own work to be giving so much.
Yeah.
I actually don't read Sheldon because of that.
Brad, I'm feeling that 100 pages, and I don't know, it kind of feels like a star slip to me at 100 pages.
Oh, wow. Which is exactly what I did for the second book, so yeah, there you go.
I was going to say, my books are 80 pages, and I think they're great.
the thing is, if I could get down to 5 days a week, I would probably be doing a second strip at that point. But
There you go. Dave, you need to do that.
Chris and I both at the same time. There you go.
Right. Now you're talking.
We just channeled little Brian Denham there. Hey, Brad, Dave, that's what you need to do, and you need to make a second comic book, Brad. There you go. For all you Brian Denham fans out there.
You know what? I tell you what. I'll make this commitment to you. That at some point, I will consider doing 5-6 months of just doing 5 days a week and then do a second strip.
Hey, Dave.
My wife's smiling.
Dave. Don't you worry your little head about it. You just have Gloria call me later, and she and I will work it out.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, here's what you're going to do, Dave. You're doing 4 days a week. And
have your business people call me, and we'll work it out. All right, guys, I got a split, so you guys have to finish this podcast without me.
Hey, take care. Enjoy Seattle, Scott.
And then,
wait a minute. Hold up. Who's recording that at that point?
Well, someone better hit record now to pick up where I'm...
I have been recording from the very beginning.
All right, Brad, you just send me what you have, and then I'll combine.
Wait a minute, I lied. I haven't. Hold on, I'll hit record right now. I'll send you the second half.
I've been recording. If that helps.
Oh, you've been recording from the beginning?
So if you click record now, Scott.
I just hit record too, guys. We're gonna be fine.
My God.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Goodbye.
All right, baby. Do you want to go to the mailbag real quick? We'll do one question, and then we'll call.
You guys will have to probably reconnect Skype, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
And good luck.
Here we go.
Very good. That was a lot of fun having Mike on the podcast. We have to thank him again. Mike Krahulik from Penny Arcade joined us in the first half. And now we're going to do a quick mailbag, and then I think we're going to call it a week, aren't we, boys?
I think so, yeah.
I'm all tuckered out, so yeah.
All right, here we go. This one is from Simon from robotblood.com. It says it's not a webcomic, but it has comics. Dear Webcomic Weekly, and this is a little bit more long-winded, but it's got nuances, so I'm going to go all the way through it. So just bear with me, okay, guys? I'm a longtime fan of all of your work. Now, though, I find the podcast keeps me most entertained. I was just listening to the podcast, and I think I can give a little bit of insight for writers looking for artists.
Okay.
Right now I'm working for a local writer for some gag cartoons he hopes to shop around at a local and national level magazines. He has found my website, saw that I was local, and talked to me about it, and now I'm doing a fairly cheap initial package of 10 to 15 cartoons that will belong to him. If we start to work together regularly, we'll renegotiate. Basically, find a locally based artist, and if you want to get him or her interested in your concept, either have a really good story or a little bit of money. I'm working on a per-gag basis, which could work for long-term comics or even a strip-based comics, but it's really the only surefire way to get an artist to work for you and value your time. If you can catch a young artist who still undervalues himself and his work, you could even get it started on the cheap. Thanks for the great content, Simon. So that's his pro tip, and that's what he's suggesting. What do we think about that?
Wait a minute. Let me understand. He is saying that he's the artist. And a local writer has come to him, and so he's drawing 10 to 15 cartoons that will belong to the writer, not to him.
That's correct. And he's
and they'll
them.
Rework it if it works out.
And he's getting what in recompense for that?
He said the words are fairly cheap.
Fairly cheap. Okay.
I don't like it.
I wouldn't recommend that either. I read the first half of it and really cringed. And in the end, near the end, he brings me back a little bit, and then at the very end, I'm cringing again. Number one, if you're selling something to someone that you give over complete rights to, in other words, he says, I'm selling an initial package that will belong to him. If you sell someone full rights to your work, you have to charge them for that work plus what you think that work might be worth in the future, because this is your one and only chance to get paid for this work. If this person goes forth and sells 15 comics to Playboy magazine, all right, now you guys are going to have to forgive me. I haven't checked out rates at Playboy for a long time, but last I checked, they were
wink.
No, I really haven't.
Because you don't look at the rates.
For courting disaster, I actually thought about pixel editing off the clothes, off the people, and making them nudes with just a couple little marks here and there, and reselling them to Playboy. So I have, but I that failed a long time ago. But here's my point: $500 per cartoon, if my memory serves.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you sell 10. Strips at 15 or at 10 strips at $150 a piece. I don't know the math, but I think if they sold that, that's like $1,500,000, isn't it?
Yeah, that guy is living on Easy Street right now.
Yeah,
but my point is, you've got one chance to make your money if you're signing over complete rights. You have one chance. Now here's where he's equally naive, in my opinion, Simon. You're probably the nicest guy in the whole wide world, but I think you're naive on this one. And that is where he says, if it takes off, we'll renegotiate. Now he's using a word renegotiate. What strength does he have to renegotiate at that point? This guy is finding out that the content that he writes, he can get into whatever magazines, local or national. He can, like Mike Krahulik just said, you know, in a certain way, the artist is a little bit replaceable. At what point does this guy think he's in a good position for negotiating? This writer can say, hey, I've got the contacts. I've got the in with all the right editors. I don't need you anymore. I'll find somebody else to draw in that same style and I'll do just fine.
Yeah, that's something that I had to learn again and again and again, especially in cases where somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, I got this concept. We're gonna work it out." And you know, I would be naive enough to actually offer a worse deal for myself with the assumed promise that, you know, if I give this writer guy, you know, in this case it was, you know, me doing web development for some outfit, I would say, well, I'll give them a really good price and undercut myself, and maybe that will encourage them to hire me later for more work, and then I'll give them my real rate. And that never happened. I was always, you know, I would find myself, oh, that's all the money I made. Well, how about some more work? And they'd go, nah, yeah, no. And it just never came around again.
And there's always an excuse. There's always, well, the economy, this and that. And really what happens is you're getting replaced by somebody else who's got an even lower self-esteem or maybe a lower idea of what business is, who's maybe a little bit – who's doing the same thing that Chris was doing.
Yeah,
saying,
what's interesting –
hey, maybe I'll get my foot in the door, and his price is even lower than Chris's.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that bargaining, you're in that position. Once the deal is sold and the cartoons specifically are starting to make money, the strongest bargaining position you ever have is the ability to walk away. And at that point, you don't have the ability to walk away because it's either money or no money.
Right.
The strongest point in bargaining is always at the outset and is always to say, look, it's equal parts going in, it's equal parts coming out. You're doing the writing, I'm doing the drawing. Let's split it 50-50. If you're doing more legwork on the sales, we can do it 60-40. If you're doing more legwork on this, we can do it. You know what I mean? But,
right.
But that's the point. That's the point where you want to establish the rate. That's the point where you want to establish percentages. Because otherwise, like Brad and Chris were saying, there's always going to be an excuse. There's always going to be, oh, this client doesn't pay that much, or all the economy's going down, or all the rate of inflation, or all the price of tires, or, you know, there's always something.
Right.
And it always ends out where the artist loses.
And
so you've got to protect yourself up front.
What did Mike? What were the two words that Mike Krahulik said that resonated with you the most in his interview? I'll tell you what they are for me: mutual respect. And you can't respect somebody who's offering themselves up for a screw-in.
Yeah, you really can't.
Right? Am I right?
You really can't.
I mean, that's a harsh way to say it, but if you're offering yourself to take the short end of the stick, your partner's not going to respect that. And you can't respect somebody who does that.
No. And ultimately, if it starts off on that foot, it's not going to end well. Is the unfortunate advice I've learned, and probably you guys have learned time and time again. When it starts off that way oh, we're going to pay you down the line, they never pay you down the line.
Well, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Like Chris said, it's imagined it's an imagined contract. He's saying he imagines that this is going to happen, but meanwhile, this writer may very well be sitting back saying, hey, I got this artist that works for, you know, $5 a strip, and, you know, when I sell that, I get $450 when Playboy puts that in the magazine. By the way, take a look at yourself from the writer's point of view. You're in a situation, you're writing comics, you found this guy that does them for $5, and I don't know what the actual numbers are, I'm obviously making a little bit of a straw man. But let's say you're making $450 per strip. Is there anything that convinces you to make $300 per strip?
No.
Not
that's
if
what's
you're smart,
fascinating
you're
not. That's what's fascinating about this email too, is because it's almost like he's giving advice on both sides of the aisle. I had a project that I wrote a comic book and I want to get it drawn. I'm still talking to artists and trying to get it done. But the advice that Simon gives is, if you can catch a young artist who still undervalues himself and his work, you can get it started on the cheap. As from the writer's standpoint, yeah, that is ideal. You find somebody who's like, this guy doesn't even know what he's got. I'm gonna lowball him, and then I'll get great work for really cheap. But as an artist, from that standpoint, you have to be wary of the writer who's doing that and protect yourself and have some value in your work.
Yeah. Brad said this before, it bears repeating. The two things you will always hear in business proposals to you as an artist or as an orator is, oh, there's no money in it, but it's great exposure. They'll always say that. Or they'll always say there's no money, but there's money down the line. And on both of those cases, you want to run 99.9% of the time.
You look for the nearest door and you jump out the window next to it.
Yeah.
Seriously, because it's the oldest group of lines that businessmen use on artists all the time, and you want to avoid that in all cases. Your work has value, your work has a specific monetary value, and you ask for what it's worth, and you get paid up front or at time of delivery for what it's worth. And you don't wait for money down the line, and you don't trade on the hope for exposure, because neither of them are ever worth time and effort that you put into them.
And I understand the need for a balance between, you know, well, I think my work is worth $100 an hour, And then you approach the guy with that figure, and he goes, "Bush, yikes, I was thinking of paying you 15, so never mind."
Well, no, that, but that's then, okay, though. Because well, if you start out at 100 and he says 15, well, then the right answer just might be 60 or 70. That's when the negotiation begins.
Well, to me, and yes, the negotiation needs to come. If you've entered the agreement and now you're like, and then we'll renegotiate. Well, you probably won't. You're stuck with what you're with.
You're absolutely right.
But the thing is that even if you say, I think my work is worth $80 an hour, and they go, no, I say 20, and take it or leave, and you go, well, I really think it's 80, so it doesn't work out. At some point, you will find somebody who goes, your work is worth 80. And at that point, you've got a precedent, and you can go to the next guy and say, look, I did work for this guy for this much.
Right.
And now you've got a minimum that you can always fall back on.
And, you know, being the insecure people that we are as artists, we're always thinking that we're going to say, I'm gonna tell this guy that I'm going to do this for $80. And, you know, you screw up your courage, and you finally make those words come out of your mouth. And you know what happens? 9 chances out of 10, the person sitting on the other side of the desk, you can tell in their eyes that they're relieved because they were thinking that you were going to charge 160. You know what I mean?
And you immediately regret it.
How high, you know what I mean? It's always better to go too high and let yourself get talked down a little bit than to give a real cheese ball quote. And then to get stuck doing this project for half of what you know that you are worth.
That doesn't always happen though, because I did, and this is a timely story. I did Jerry Painter Kid. They wanted me to do music for their Paint the Line 2 thing,
mm-hmm.
And they were going to commission me to do it, or Jerry was commissioning me to do it. So I worked on it. The first one I did, he said it like he didn't quite rock enough, so I ended up doing a second one really quick. But I worked on those for, I don't know, it was like 15, 20 hours solid over 2 days. And I always lowball myself, and I go, no, I can't lowball myself. This time I'm going to put my number out there, and then we're just going to watch what happens. And I bet you it's going to end up okay. I bet you it's going to be fine. So I send the email off, and the email comes back 5 minutes later from Jerry, and he goes, "What the F?" And I felt like the worst person in the world. And then I said, "Oh, man, I feel terrible." And he's like, no, it was just sticker shock. Like, I understand, like, that is what it is worth. But it startled me. He had to call me and calm me down because I felt so like that is the worst thing that you could, like, I think I'm worth this much. And they go, "No, you're not."
Hey, but you know what?
Can I tell you guys since I used to work for a consumer company, when I would hire artists all the time, I'm not kidding when I tell you that there would be certain artists that would turn in bills of $10,000 to $20,000 for not a huge number of pieces of art.
Right.
So I can assure you that from a corporate standpoint, we are all undercharging.
Oh yeah.
And so when it comes to these people, it's like, blocking at $100, well, then they're not serious about their business. Because I know artists that can easily charge $5,000 and get corporate clients to pay for it. And granted, they're not going to get that all the time, and I certainly can't get it with the type of work that I do. But depending on what you do, you have to understand that your work is more than your initial expectation of what it should get at the beginning.
I'll tell you what, Chris. Next time you see Jerry, you give him a big hug and thank him because he did you probably the best favor that one cartoonist can give to another, or that one person can give to another. The quote is, "Anything that doesn't destroy you makes you stronger." You have weathered the storm of having Jerry, you know, somebody whose work you admire phenomenally, send you a what the F email as a response to your quote, and you weathered that storm, whether you weathered it, you know, easily or with difficulty.
I'm still an alcoholic.
It. You've been there. You've handled that. And the next time you give a quote, you're going to give it with a little bit more confidence.
I think it was worse because I know him a little better than if it was just friend. Somebody. Yeah. And then I could go, oh, well, yeah. I mean, come on, man. That's what it's cost.
Well,
but we're
going to have to go through and talk about exactly how you figure out what your work is worth.
That would be great, actually. We should do that in the future, yeah.
Because that's something that I still remember my Econ 101 professor at Alma College going through a dissertation on exactly that. And it was a fascinating discussion. We really ought to maybe it jives with some of the ideas you have. Maybe we'll put that on the slate for the next podcast.
That is a great topic, yeah.
And you know what we should do? We should, for that podcast, we should have somebody who does a lot of freelancer for hire work, a friend of ours that does that a lot. That might be worthwhile to have. I mean, not that the four of them, but I can think of a few cartoonists we all know. Mm-hmm.
Somebody who knows what he's doing is what you're saying.
Yeah.
We just need some balance, Chris. Out. We just need some on the other.
Sure. Well, let's see. I worked on it for 10 hours. I don't know. Was that a sandwich? Have a sandwich? Is that?
But Chris's math. He's like, all right. So I did it on the summer solstice. So using
I'm looking for
theorem.
I'm looking for ways to like. That seems like it's too high. All right. Well, okay. I didn't work for all of the 15 hours. I did go to the bathroom. And
but also Chris starts to factor in. Well, I did enjoy hours 5 through 9. That really can't be.
I'm proud of the outcome. You can't put a price on that. So
my pride is up. So certainly
pride.
that's worth something. And all right. So does that do it for that question, Jen? Should we wrap it up for the week?
You know who you talk about people who know what they're doing. You know who I think really knows who what they're doing and is worth the little bit of money that they charge? Indicia.
Ayo, Indicia.com.
See how I did that? That's what you call a lot of times on the radio, Dave, on your top 40 stations, they call that a segue or a transition.
Ah,
yeah.
I am a nouveau, a naive to the process, Brad. I was amazed at your supple twisting of the English language.
Hey, guys, and speaking of radio stations, Indicia.com is that.
No, nothing.
No? Oh. I guess I don't understand what we just did.
No.
I tell you what, the best part is just having Brad say the .com part. I want to hear that part.
Well, here's the deal. Indicia.com is sponsoring Webcomics Weekly this month, and we're really proud to have them on. Not only are they our first sponsor in a chain that we hope is a mile long, but you know what? There's somebody that that we all really, really respect as a company, and somebody that we can offer to the listeners of Webcomics Weekly with a real clean conscience, because these guys offer a magnificent product. It's very affordable, and for what it offers you, for those of you trying to make that next step to being a professional web cartoonist, these guys are key. And I know, Chris, you use them all the time.
Absolutely, I do. And the thing was that I had to watch Scott use it. I don't know if Dave, were you the first one to adopt it, or was Scott? I don't remember. Maybe it was you.
I think it was me the first one, but I got it from Rich Stevens or somebody had mentioned it to me as a recommendation.
Yeah, but I had to watch it in action before I had tried another similar service.
Unnamed service
that I was quite disappointed with, and it was like a hair above waiting in line at the post office. So, but when I saw Indicia, I was really excited about the just the ability to track and keep track of, and the fact that it saves all your orders. And I need something to do that for me because I'm terrible at it.
Well, in a sense, go ahead, Dave.
Oh, no, I was going to say, there's a couple of things that we didn't mention in the weeks before that I was thinking about. Actually, you guys are going to laugh when I tell you this. I was actually processing shipping orders during the last podcast as we were doing it, and I forgot to mention this one thing, is that it popped up in my mind after we got done recording that you actually pay less for certain kinds of postage when you use digital postage versus paying at the post office. And so for priority mail, for some types of delivery confirmations, I think. And Chris can correct me on this, I think certain types of delivery confirmations are free, aren't they, when you use Indicia? Like, if you're doing priority mail, doesn't it come with a delivery confirmation online for free?
I'm trying to find out. Let me see here.
You know what? Let me do a fake order myself real quick while we're talking.
Let's all do fake orders.
And while you guys are doing that, here's the thing that really keeps coming back to me is Indicia sends out an email to your client or to your customer when you've shipped the order. With the delivery confirmation number on it, and it's a email message that you can personalize Dave has links to special free wallpapers that his customers can download and stuff like that. So yeah. You're really taking advantage of that thing that we on Web Comics Weekly always hammer home, and that is community building, making your reader feel like they're part of something big, and that what they're doing is an expression of their self. And here you get them to the point where they order a book or they order a print or a button, a T-shirt, coffee mug. And that's a really big step in somebody's community-ness, if you will. Now they get an email back from you, and they get even more. Psych 101, going back to Alma College again for the second time today, Psych 101 will tell you that's what you call positive reinforcement. And what you just did is you reinforced that action of buying a book. Even slightly psychologically, you have made it more likely that they're going to buy another book in the future because a good thing happened to them when they did.
Right.
How's that for vamping? Did I vamp long enough? Dave, you got what you're looking for?
Thank you, Lady Vamp. Just by comparison, priority mail package for me sending out a book to somewhere in the continental U.S. or actually any state in the U.S., $4.80 to send it at the post office, $4.75 to send it by Indicia. But the delivery confirmation, which I think is somewhere between 10 and 30 cents extra, it's free when you do it online. So I'm saving. Yeah. And, you know, this doesn't sound like a lot right now, but when you do, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 orders, that starts to add up.
That's what you do in a month, but...
Oh, not me, but no. But, I mean, over the course of a year, that adds up.
Speaking of somebody who's sending out a lot fewer packages than you, but envisions being able to get to that point, I don't care how much I'm saving as long as I'm saving something. Because the thing that we as web cartoonists know for sure is every little bit counts. I'm making a little bit on Project Wonderful. I'm making a little bit on this ad. I'm making a little bit for every T-shirt I'm doing, and everything adds up. And if I can save a little bit of money, even if it's a little bit of money, over a period of time, that's going to add up.
Right.
Yeah. And the fact that I think it's especially a big deal because it's delivery confirmation and the idea that you can be sure that what you mailed out arrived, or at least gives you a method to say, yes, it went to the post office. Yes, it's at your door. Yes, it went to this address instead of another one rather than you thought it was lost, but it went to your parents' house, which is the one on your PayPal. And that's free on there.
Right.
And when I didn't do delivery confirmation, it was miserable because I could not, I think I talked about this before. I couldn't tell anybody for sure. Yes, it got there.
Right.
I just had to send it again.
Ugh.
So,
and one other thing that and I can save this for next week if we're running long on time, but one other thing about NBC that I absolutely love, and I don't even know that Chris or Scott use this, but I want to teach them how to use it. There's a little thing on the Indicia pop-up box when you're mailing. There's a little thing called, it's a heart symbol. And underneath that heart symbol is all your favorite types of packages, so you can save all your favorites. So in one section, I have all my domestic packaging, and by that I just mean stuff going to the U.S., and then I have everything that's going internationally and then stuff specifically going to Canada. And within each of those sections, I have 30 or 40 different types of package of like, all right, is it one book going priority flat mail or flat rate envelope? Two books, three books, four books, five books in a flat rate box, one book by media mail, two books by media mail, a shirt and a book by me. And so what's great about this is that I don't have to measure anything anymore. I click a button and it knows right away. And I'm not kidding you, that saves me at least an hour a week in having to weigh and measure and tape things.
Let me backtrack just one little bit because I actually have this in front of me because I just shipped something out the old-fashioned way. You guys said that delivery confirmation was free?
Yes.
If you affix a delivery confirmation sticker to your package and mail it through the post office, do you know how much that costs?
Mm-hmm.
$0.75.
Wow.
$0.75.
I knew it was package.
That's almost a dollar per package that you're saving just using Indicia.
Well, or 75 cents per package, Brad.
Well, okay. I round up. That's just one more quarter, and you're right there.
That's
at
like $5 a package.
Really, that's at least $1,000 right there.
I round up to the nearest quarter. All right, those other coins don't have any time for me.
the point is well taken, though, Brad, because two packages, $1.50, that's nothing to sniff at. So, I mean, the one of the reasons why we were excited and totally willing to take on Indicia as a sponsor, like Brad said, is that this is something that we wholeheartedly endorsed before we ever had them as an advertiser. In the book, you can see it on a couple different pages in the book, how we talk about them. And so it's something we wholeheartedly recommend for thinking about starting to turn their hobby into a part-time job and then eventually the part-time job. So and once again, it's indicia.com. That's spelled ENDICIA.com/webcomics for the special deal that they put together for Webcomics Weekly listeners. And that's probably it for the week, gents. What do you think?
Sounds good to me, my friends.
All right.
All right, lads. So with that, you've been listening to Webcomics Weekly. Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com.
Chris Straub, Starslet.com.
Brad Geiger from Evil Inc. at Evil-Comic.com. We also had Scott Kurtz from PvPOnline.com. And our special guest at the top half of the podcast, Mike Krahulik. And he's from Penny Arcade, Penny-Arcade.com.
Everybody likes the hyphens.
And don't forget, if you're looking for a business manager, go out and get yourself a Furby. I'm going right now to Toys R Us. Get myself a Furby.
Beautiful, guys. Hey, we'll see you next week.
All right. Talk to you later, guys.
All right. Bye. Now, tell me, you guys, Dave, did you record?